Welcome to DAO Today, a podcast that hosts lively and challenging discussions on decentralized autonomous organizations, DAOs. Alongside some experts and builders in the space, this podcast aims to promote your knowledge on everything DAO, discuss blockchain-related topics, and challenge the lack of diversity and inclusion in the industry. DAO Today podcast is hosted by Alexa Mill, aka Deluxa. There is a lot to learn about DAOs as a concept, what they are, and how to build decentralized while navigating the complexities of the regulatory environment. You will have an opportunity to learn from builders, change makers, legal, compliance, and other professionals. So follow and subscribe to DAO Today with Alexa Mill not to miss out on any episodes. I promise you will learn new things and have some fun along the way. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode DAO Today. I'm your host, Alexa, and today we have Daniel as our guest. Hello, Daniel, and welcome. It's great to have you here today.
Hey, Alexa. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Would you please introduce yourself and tell us how are you involved in the industry?
Yeah, sure. So I'm an organizational nerd, really. I've been in the progressive organization space for about a decade, went through holacracy, sociocracy, systems thinking, all of these kind of things after an initial career in the food world. And since 2018, been very much into DAOs, so with a focus on governance and organization design. So I'm an instigator of RNDAO, which is a research and development DAO focused on researching DAOs and building tools for DAOs. So very much still in the topic and in that space. Before that, I was head of governance at Aragon. And I also had, as I was saying, a career in Web2 management, organization design, leadership theory, and those kind of domains.
Great. And tell me, based on your experience with DAOs, what are some of the biggest challenges DAOs face?
So I would say it's mostly a cultural movement thing. So when we see the origins of Bitcoin and later on Ethereum and so on, there was a very libertarian streak, very idealist streak. And DAOs were partially a necessary solution to a problem that people had. Is like there are these assets on chain that now we have, and then we need to coordinate. And there was the opportunity to essentially collaborate. And people are like, great, how do we do that? So they started kind of creating technology that allowed them to make decisions on chain with the particularities of the blockchain at that time that is global, is anonymous. There is not like a lot of communication infrastructure, is again very libertarian, very anarchist sort of movement. So it has a lot of that at the origin. Then as it starts to advance, and there is the whole DeFi summer and the ICO boom and so on, and the industry grows a lot, there is more and more people who come into the space and they start to see other possibilities. And it's a little bit a blessing and a curse in the sense that there is a lot more people, a lot more resources, and so on. And that allows the space to grow and mature, and also to cover, to pay a lot more people to build technology, to devise solutions, and so on. There is a lot more organizations who are trying to be DAOs. So it starts to become a meme and mature. But at the same time, the ideology starts to be a little bit diluted. And so then the concern starts to morph of like, practically, how do we get all of these startups to function? And that creates kind of like a new wave of DAO tooling, and as well a new wave of discussions and thinking around these, that then we have the next year, the NFT boom. And with the NFT boom, we have again another huge crowd that comes in that is not necessarily coming for these libertarian streak, even though the narrative continues. And in the world at large, we have gigantic issues with disengagement at work, with disenchantment, with governments, and so on. So this narrative of we can create better organizations, more empowerment, more freedom, and so on is very, very appealing. So a lot of people kind of come, but they don't fully understand it, and many don't. So we kind of have a dilution again. And what I'm seeing now is like one of the major challenges is that there is both, let's say, a frustration with, we have all of these startups, all of these organizations we started, we thought it was going to go to the moon. Then actually the markets have been a little bit difficult. And we have all of these operational needs that we need to cover. And people start to realize that reinventing organizations is not easy. And it's not like you're going to come and just because you're free from a government, suddenly, instantly, you can make everything wonderful. Actually, these are very complex, difficult problems. And then on the other side, there is still that idealism that is somewhat there, albeit a little bit diluted. So in this tension, there is essentially a group that is still building and really trying to make DAOs happen. While there is other people who are like, well, right now I just need a solution to make my organization viable, to deliver a product, to be able to iterate, to get customers, and so on, and all the basic requirements of a business that needs to be sustainable. And the tension in between kind of these two groups, let's say in between the hardliners who are like, no, it needs to be more decentralized, more permissionless, more privacy, more whatever it is, and the other people has created some frustration. And there is a bit of a backlash or a counter movement of like, well, maybe we just need to go back to corporations. And people don't use that because corporations is a dirty word, but they're essentially going back to a lot of startup traditional practices. And that's kind of where the progressive decentralization comes from. It's doing product innovation or business model innovation and organizational innovation at the same time is really hard. Like if you need to build a product of your startup and at the same time figure out how that startup operates in a completely new way, that's super hard. So a lot of people are like, well, what if we just operate in an old-fashioned way and then down the line we're going to change? And so one of the biggest challenges for me is really that we lose sight of the possibility to reinvent organizations and go back to the previous model that we know is broken because so many people moving to this space have left because we know we tried it and tested ad nauseum. And so the biggest challenge is really, can we sustain the desire to innovate, to try new things without just going back for the quick and easy, which over the medium and long term is going to come back to bite us as the organizations grow and become bureaucratic and disengagement happens and so on. And then we just repeat history. And in some other space, people are going to say, let's reinvent organizations here and everyone is going to migrate there. So we'll just repeat the problem.
That's very true. And you brought up so many amazing points, especially with that diluted ideology, since what I've been seeing a lot, and I always say the same story, I think, why I went to the conferences and I would meet so many CEOs, CTOs, CFOs as I was, and I would be like, I'm a bit confused. Can you please explain? Because it does not really work that way. And while I'm working with DAOs, I also had several projects being like, well, we want to be a DAO, we want to have community, but we don't really want to decentralize our power because then it's slow, then the community does not really know what they're supposed to vote for. And there'd be so many stupid excuses, to mildly put it, on why that sufficient level of decentralization is not reached, or at least on the road to reach that decentralization. And I'm also curious to understand, like, since you mentioned that you were involved in designing governance, and I do believe that decentralization risks happen with the governance and with the operations. And opposite to the popular thinking, quote unquote, that centralization happens with having that illegal wrap, we do know that it's not really ideal solution, but it's a tool to protect and limit those unlimited liabilities. I would also love to hear your take on that as well. And but the actual danger is how you structure the governance and how you structure the operation. So what do you think of that, and what's your experience?
I mean, it's a huge question. I generally think about the operation, or like the operating model / business model, as one pocket. The governance as like how the different people are going to make decisions as another block, that I also usually divide in between meta governance, or like who's defining the rules of the game or who can change how we govern, and also the really, really big decisions, like what would you would imagine maybe the shareholders vote in a general assembly, or what the board of directors decide, but not what the executives do. What the executives do would be, in a traditional corporation, would be a little bit more operational governance, which is like, how do the teams day-to-day make decisions? And then the third bit is the whole legal area. Now, obviously, these are heavily enmeshed, and you cannot design one without taking the others into consideration, which is what makes these a three-dimensional puzzle that is really, really hard to solve, especially when we have multiple jurisdictions, global talent, a mix of ideologies, right, that are clashing sometimes, and the pressure to both deliver a product or a service or an offering and make the thing sustainable and engage with the community. Generally, what I've been seeing is that this is a complex puzzle. With this, we're talking about at least three very specialized domains where you need top talent. And quite frequently, we haven't had that top talent, like the industry in the early days, because it was so early stage, there was so much infrastructure that needed to be built before you could get to applications, more like the stage we're in. What you needed was mostly developers. Like when I started to engage with DAOs around 2017, 18, if you were not a developer, there was nothing you could do. And I kind of struggled to come in because people were like, well, we kind of have this basic idea, but we're going to need a year to build the most basic application, to just start to build a treasury and a voting tool. And the issue with that was that these developers, even though very smart and very visionary in many ways, they end up making and repeating a lot of mistakes that someone coming from, let's say, a social science, political science, economy, governance, organization design would have already been able to say, like, that's a bad idea, like direct democracy, which was like what I call DAOs V1. Like the first whole wave was like all token holders vote. And first is kind of plutocratic. It's like the same as corporations. Shareholders vote, token holders vote. Is like essentially the people who have more money vote, have more voting power. So we're not improving a lot. It's still kind of interesting if we can give tokens to everyone. Because the idea was like, if it's only the shareholders who have power, what if we make everyone an owner? So let's give tokens to the contributors, let's give tokens to the community, like the airdrop and so on. And that was an interesting experiment. But on one side, like direct democracy for that doesn't work, and I'll go to explain why. But the other issue is the incentives of these different stakeholders are very different. So the workers, they need to sell their tokens to pay rent or pay their bills, whatever. The community, they are on the periphery. They don't have as much context as the people working there all the time. They probably have a very small amount of funds. So it's not like they have gigantic stake to win or to lose. If a decision increases the value of the token by 5% or reduces by 5%, if you have $100 worth of tokens, that's $5 worth of your time that you can invest before you're actually economically just worse off by participating. So even if you care about the community now, you're participating at a cost. So for small holders, the incentive is not to participate. It can be very expensive, or you participate a little bit ad hoc as a hobby, but not as something that is economically sustainable for you. So also because like the time you need to invest is not just about the voting, is the time you need to invest to learn what is going, what's the context, what's happening in the market, like all the things that you need to take into account to make a good decision. So this direct democracy model with a large crowd, with different stakeholders and so on, is a little bit simplistic and doesn't work very well to make decisions. And that has also led to a lot of disenchantment with DAOs. And a lot of people think that DAOs are direct democracy. I would say that's, no, that was a first experiment. Let's move forward. But so that's one thing. And then when we come to the legal wrappers, like, right, add another layer of complexity. And at first, I was like the more libertarian streak, right, that we were talking at the early stages is like, we're not going to incorporate, fuck the state, like, let's forget about all of that. And now it becomes more pragmatic of we're trying to start the business. We're doing these maybe because there is a mission and we have want to have a positive impact in the world, but there is also a financial concern. We want to generate some wealth for ourselves, for our family, whatever. And so for that, you don't want to end up being targeted by a state and having a lawsuit that takes away all your savings. So the limited liability becomes super important. And also, if you're trying to engage with people who, I don't know, who you want to hire as employees in a more traditional way, or if you want to hire contractors who are other organizations outside of Web3, and now the ecosystem is growing a lot, so that it's easier and easier to just operate in cryptocurrencies all the time and not leave the ecosystem. But still, for many organizations, many business models, you do require that interface, if nothing else, to onboard people into the space and help it grow. So then the ability to contract and transact with other parties and limit liability becomes more and more important. But that comes to clash with some of the early governance models and brings us to, well, what I'm hoping now is a second generation of DAOs that, yeah, I can talk about some of the ideas and visions that we're pushing forward for that. But it's a completely new generation. And for me, the thing, if I could like shout it everywhere, like plaster it in every wall where there is like DAO people or Web3 people meeting, is V1 DAOs, that was just the beginning. That was just early stage experiments. That was a small group of people that lacked a lot of diversity. We're now entering into a new stage where we have different disciplines, where we are bringing all of this other body of knowledge, where we're finally starting to learn from progressive organizations before DAOs, from cooperatives, from systems thinking, from political science, from, again, all of these different domains that have a lot to say and a lot to teach us so we can move forward rather than repeating the mistakes of the past.
Yeah, that's very true. Like, it seems like we're like spinning in circles, to be honest, because we came to this industry to remove ourselves from that very traditional centralized environment where you have that CEO, where you have that management level, and you come here because you want to be involved and to have a say and to not have that type of environment, simply put. However, what I've been noticing a lot is that everyone wants that. As long as it's, for example, bull market, or as long as everyone is happy and great things are happening. However, when, you know, shit hits the fan, then we're like, no, we don't want to do anything with that. Like, keep it, you know, with your among yourselves. We don't need to know that. You're just spreading fun like this. But no, that's, I mean, if you're a member of the organization, if you're a member of the community of the DAO, you need to be here for the good and the bad. And if you really want to have an impact and influence over the project, again, you have to be when it's both good and bad. And I also have that feeling that you're going a lot backwards to that centralized type of environment where the governance is not existing, and the rather, if we have smart contract, that means that we have governance, but that is so far from it, because you have the community and you have the tech, right? So smart contract cannot address the human nature. It just simply cannot. And there are so many different cultures in a DAO that you need to create a safe space and everyone to be heard and everyone to be involved. And a smart contract cannot address that. And one of the biggest issues generally with DAOs is the community involvement and the lack of community engagement. What do you think? What is the reason for that? And what do projects can do to improve?
Yeah, so I generally see a series of reasons. One of them is the fact that a lot of the people who are part of the community are not part of the community. And what I mean by this is rescuing the word community that's been bastardized a lot, that is really being trampled over, to talk about what actually is a sense of community. When what it feels when you're in community, you're like, oh, I feel safe here. I feel a sense of belonging. These are my people. I care for them. They care for me. And that sense of community is a really precious and powerful thing. Like, that's, it's partially because of that people go and join the army and sacrifice themselves to save a country, right? Like, when you have a really strong sense of identification with a community, with a group identity, we'll go as far as destroying ourselves for the sake of this thing, right? Like, so it's a really powerful thing. When all you do is you give some free money to strangers,
airdrops, my favorite.
Exactly.
To the moon.
Exactly, to the moon. And I mean, it's rocket fuel in terms of incentives. It's super powerful, because then, yes, you incentivize all of these people to evangelize the thing, but they're not there for the mission. They don't, you don't have a real relationship. It's very transactional by the very nature of it. That doesn't mean that later on you cannot convert it. Like, we have all these stories of, like, I came to the space for the airdrops, I stayed for the vibes or whatever it is, because they meet people, they start to, they learn about this ideology. And because the traditional structures are so messed up, you're like, oh, maybe there's an alternative here. Fine, that's something I care about. I want to fight about it. I had never thought about it this way. I didn't know people were fighting for it. I didn't know we were trying to create positive change. That's nice. So people might end up staying, but usually that transition is done very poorly. Like, is the airdrop first, think how to build a community second, and ideally the whole thing should be way more integrated. It's more like build a community that can receive that inflow and then do a small airdrop, test how your funnel is working, like whether people are actually welcome, onboarded, whether you have the capacity to create real human connection to them, to engage, to make them feel seen, to empower them to participate. And then you can go and do more airdrops or something like that. But that brings me to the second topic, which is the empowerment piece. And empowerment is two sides of a coin. On one side is you give power to the people, or you enable them. Or rather, you don't take power away from them. And that can be, the most basic is like, yeah, there is a mechanism so anyone can make a proposal and anyone can vote on a proposal. But that's really not enough, because then you need to have the component of saying, yes, it's okay for you. Like, we're social animals, we're herd animals. We need to see that someone like us is following that behavior. And then we're like, oh, okay, that's safe. People like me are also allowed to do it. And when it's only the core team and you see them as the founders, they're not people like you. When you're a community member, you're different. And you know you're different. You know they have a lot of context. You know they have a lot of influence and authority and power, and you don't. So unless you start to see other people like you who are coming from the periphery, who are new, to be welcome, to be invited, to be appreciated, to be celebrated for participating, it's a big risk to take, and only a very tiny minority is going to take it. And then the third bit is the context. Is you cannot make a decision without information. Or again, only very few people are going to propose something out of nowhere. And usually those proposals are not very good. Like, they're not very useful because you don't have the necessary context. Now, that can be okay, right? Like, that can be okay if then the community or the core group who has more context can say, hey, here are extra pieces of context. Here's how you can improve it. So for example, in Arendao, we really insist to newbies is make bad proposals. We want you to make stupid proposals, because that's the fastest way you're going to learn, and we're going to learn as well, because probably there is something you're seeing that we're not seeing. But your first proposal is going to miss a lot of context, but we have that context. So make the proposal, at least like put it in a channel, put the idea out there, and we're going to help you refine it. And if people can then see the channel, see those feeds, and see that that behavior is happening, they go like, well, okay, maybe it's safe. But it's still hard, right? There is still a communication channel of how can you pass in the most effective way that context, that information to people. So we did a lot of research in Arendao and a while about onboarding and how we can improve onboarding, because it was one of these big challenges in DAOs that everyone was talking about. And at the end, a great idea by a colleague or ex-colleague, that's Ray, he reframed it as organizational accessibility. It's like how easy it is to access the organization, to understand what is happening, to understand who is who, to understand why things are the way they are, not just like, this is the business model, or this is the way we operate, these are the channels. It's like, why, what's the logic underneath? If I can go down the rabbit holes that I'm interested in, and also understand the structure of what are the different rabbit holes, what are the different places, if I feel invited and can access the information, then very quickly, I can get to the point where I can contribute meaningfully, because people don't like to waste their time. People don't like to talk to the void. They want to feel appreciated. They want to feel they're adding value. They want to feel that their work makes a difference, right? Like, these are just human, innate humans' desires. So it's about kind of like really, really, really working very hard on that empowerment, which if done properly becomes a superpower, because people also complain a lot of this permissionlessness and people making decisions without having the context and without understanding what the protocol is about. But I usually flip it and put the responsibility a lot on the leaders and the core team. Is like, have you made it possible for them to know? And the answer is It's very hard, and they're not incentivized. You as a core team member, you have maybe even millions of dollars at stake in this protocol. You stand to gain big time or lose big time. You have huge incentives. They, no, this is a tiny thing on the side of their lives. They have a family, they have another job, they have another million things they need to care about. Let's try to make them easy for them. Because if we do, then they can contribute meaningfully and they can add value to what we're doing. And they win, we win, everyone wins. But it's not easy. It's hard work that needs to be done by the team and everyone involved.
You're 100% in that. Like, when I hear founder as well, I cannot let my community vote because they do not understand the project. They do not know anything about the project. I'm like, well, you're the founder. Like, if your community does not know anything about your project or how the DAO operates, that's like 100% on you. And of course, you don't need to be hand-holding or anything each and every member. However, you do need to have mechanisms in place that do easily onboard. Bad word now when I heard you. Thank you for that. And you really need to make the project accessible to them so that when they come in, they have a place where they can read information about the project. Don't use too complicated language. Not everyone is a tech savvy, right? So you need to speak simple language so a very Jack and Jill can understand. And if they have any questions, they also feel free to ask those questions in the channels. And also what I've been, since like I teach DAOs in a school, and the students would be like, hey, Alexa, can you tell me how do I go to a DAO? How do I start working there? And I'm like, well, just drop in and say, hey, I like this project. I would like to contribute. And that's enough. And like, don't be worried. Don't be afraid to ask. And don't be afraid to say, hey, I'm new to the space. I'm still learning. Can someone help me? Or can you tell me what to read, what to look at? And I think that's majority because of the Web 2 mentality, right? Like when you're in a corporate world and when you're in general, the usual setting, if you do not know something, then you're looked at like, are you stupid or what? Yeah. And luckily this community in this environment is opposite of that. And people are really welcoming and they do want to explain. Of course, you will always like encounter some assholes, but they are such a minority, so it shouldn't be really something that really discourages anyone. And what I would also like to ask you, since you talked about the voting and the issues of voting, and I would also love to hear of the DAOI too that you mentioned earlier. When it comes to voting, I do understand that we do need a community that understands the project for them to vote on certain proposals. However, the fact is that some members are just a bit more passive because the fact is that Discord and being involved in DAOs is an overtime job and it really takes a lot. But on the other hand, I don't think that disqualifies anyone from actually being able to vote. And the voting systems that we have today, such as one wallet, one vote, then the weighted voting, liquid governance, and quadratic voting. So taking those four, or if you have a fifth in mind, I would love to hear your take on that and which of these voting types are the most appropriate for communities and DAOs.
Yeah, I love this topic. Let me try to take it a little bit to first principles. The approach I try to go through is people are part of an organization because they have needs that they are not able to satisfy alone. If they were able to do it, they wouldn't be part of an organization because coordinating with other people is complicated. And maybe the need is for social interaction, for belonging or something, for be part of a community or something. But still, like fundamentally, people have needs. Different stakeholders have different needs. The contributors, they offer labor. They want to have money to pay the bills. At the most basic, they also want to participate in a mission or something. The investors, they need return on investment. The founders, well, they have their mission, their idea, they want to be founders, they also probably have some financial needs and so on. And so every one of these stakeholders has needs, And as long as we give them a way to advocate for those needs, they're likely going to get trampled over or exploited intentionally or unintentionally, and they're going to go somewhere else. If nothing else, because the need to express ourselves is important. Like, we like agency as human beings. This is one of the most researched psychological theories of motivation. One of the key things is agency. People like to be able to decide. So you need to give people kind of these possibilities. Then when it comes to voting, it's not, well, first, voting is, I would abstract it away from voting and say it's about approving a decision or approving a proposal or making it official. And the reason for that is a sort of safety mechanism so that bad proposals, like damaging proposals, bad ideas or something, don't go through. And there is some sort of selection of the best ideas, the ones that are actually viable, knowing that we cannot implement all the possible ideas because then the organization kind of lose focus, lose shape, will probably waste resources. Essentially, won't continue to be sustainable if everything goes. So we need a filter. Is voting the best filter? Not necessarily. And there is many stages before that something comes to a vote where there can be a lot of filtering, or even better, not filtering, but refining of ideas. And that's kind of like the deliberation stage. So for example, right now we've been doing a lot of research in decision making, and we're starting to work on a problem prioritization tool so that the community as a whole can collaborate to identify challenges, to identify things that need solutions. And then those problem areas, those different challenges that have been prioritized, that have been selected, then the community can work around that. So there is already, let's say, a level of collective intelligence that is being applied to not even create the solution, but even before the solution, to identify the right problems to work on, or at least the most pressing, the most impactful problems for the community to focus their attention on, because, you know, attention is limited. Then you can have a whole solutioning process, where ideally, if you have multiple stakeholders collaborating from the solutioning or the solution design moment, which is very often is done in the forums where someone posts a proposal and others comment. The issue is the forums are really bad for this. Like, they're really not good UX design to have an in-depth conversation, because you post a proposal that has like 20 different points. Like, the whole areas about the budget, the reason, the problem, all of these things at the same time, and then you have a linear feed. It's a terrible format for a complex discussion. So a lot of people are backing away from governance altogether. Like, in our user research, we're seeing people are afraid of decentralized governance and deliberation and discussion because it creates conflicts. And online, in a feed platform, asynchronously, different cultures, different stakeholders, sometimes with contrasting needs, is very, very hard to communicate effectively, to see the humanity, to see the good intentions. People get triggered, they get activated, they communicate poorly, and then you have a conflict and it falls apart. So people are almost like moving away from governance very often, thinking that governance is the problem. Well, actually, the problem is that people don't know how to talk to each other well online. And it's challenging, don't take me wrong. But so there is also a need to really think through how can we have effective discussions, craft proposals together, so that when the proposal comes to a vote, already all of these inputs, all of these different needs, all of these, let's say, refining, filtering, making sure that it's taking into account the different angles that need to be considered, all of that has been taken care of. And then the voting almost doesn't matter. It's just like a rubber stamp in the thing. Now, of course, it's important, as I'm saying, it's kind of like a safety mechanism, but we have obsessed over voting and ignored all the steps before that are way more important. And because we have ignored them, we haven't helped people to figure it out. We have like really broken processes in forums where you need to follow this weird template. People are not business analysts. Not everyone went to business school, so they don't necessarily know how to write a good proposal. There is very little support to do it. And right, like, and so it's a daunting exercise that requires a lot of time, and you're not being paid for that time as a community member. It takes like a good 20 hours to craft a good proposal. Even me, who have been in this space for a very long time, wrote hundreds of proposals. A good proposal can take you weeks of work, depending on what it is. And you're not being paid. And then if the community says, no, that's weeks of work that you wasted, that you're not, again, that you're not getting any reward or anything. So it can be dire. But then when it comes to the voting themselves, to really answer your question, we spend in R&D, we spend a lot of time dealing with or engaging with other communities outside of Web3. And we have spent some good time engaging with democracy researchers, like more the political science domain, because they've been suffering from these challenges for, you know, the last 2000 years or more. Like, this is not new. So and they've been applying a scientific approach to it. So it's not to say they're perfect. They have their own biases, their own limitations and all of that, but there is some very interesting ideas. And what right now is all the rage in the democracy researchers circles is deliberation. And deliberation and deliberation, sortition, and citizen assemblies. So the example, if anyone has seen like an American movie of a court ruling where there is a jury, and that jury are citizens, they're essentially random people who don't have a lot of context. They're selected at random. They're not all the citizens of the country who are gonna decide if that person is guilty or not. They're a small sample of them selected at random, invited there, and they get put through a process where they are not experts, they are not lawyers, they are not judges. But there are the experts who will give them testimony, who will give them input, will present facts, will present arguments, and so on. The judge will be there to make sure that the process is done well, that people are not trying to manipulate or doing things that are illegal or something like that, but that is a legitimate process. And then the citizens, the ordinary people, take all of this input from the experts, and they deliberate and together come to a decision. So the same pattern has been used, for example, in France to decide on climate policy. Climate policy is a super complex thing with many different stakeholders, many different things you need to balance and take into account. These are really hard, wicked problem decisions that you need to make. And so you're getting a whole bunch of non-experts to make those decisions, but you get the experts to give them information. And it works really well because when you're an expert, you can get a little bit of tunnel vision. You can get a little bit squared and a little bit stuck in your ways. So actually having a non-expert kind of gives a bridge for creativity, but you still have the expert input. And so these patterns of deliberation, what is called a citizen assembly, is actually gaining a lot of traction. And it's a pattern that we haven't explored in DAOs at all. So that's one thing, is for complex decisions, we can use these citizen assemblies. We're actually recently making a proposal to a protocol partnering with one of the Missions Publiques, which is one of the organizations that has facilitated this process for the European Union and so on. And we're making a proposal for the Cosmos ecosystem to run one. I don't know if it's going to work because they see us as outsiders and they don't like outsiders at the moment and so on. So, you know, it has all of the political challenges of getting a change in governance implemented. But as a pattern, it's very promising whether a proposal works or not. And then the other thing is, that can be used for complex decisions, but then we can also use a lot of fractalization of like sub-DAOs, sub-teams, sub-units, and so on, and we can effectively delegate authority to them. The issue is that we don't want the money coming from a centralized single authority, whether that is a council that is elected or a single CEO or a community voting tool. If we have a single point where the money flows from, everyone is going to start dancing around that source of funding. And they becomes very political and the organization becomes very inward looking. When what you actually want is an organization that is outward looking, that is figuring out how do I provide value to the ecosystem and receive value in exchange so we are sustainable. And so trying to push that decision-making away from a single source, like what we are exploring in R&DAO for our own organization design, is to have more of a network of teams. So instead of the community trying to decide or the elected delegates or whoever it is, because, you know, representative democracy also has a million challenges. And we know these from every government that has corruption issues and political misshapes and all of that kind of thing. Right? Like, that's not necessarily the solution. Let's not kid ourselves. It's becoming very popular at the moment, but this is maybe necessary as a practical concern to make things, to keep the organization running, but it's far from ideal. But then if we can push a lot of decision to the units, and instead of the centralized treasury or centralized the top decision-making mechanism deciding whether the HR department or the marketing department get a bigger budget, you can get them to agree between them. You can be the marketing department, hire the HR department to do recruitment for them and pay them based on that recruitment. And you can scale that as a network of teams working with each other. So you're pushing decision actually at the front lines closer to the customer, whether your customer is an external person who needs a product or service and will pay you in exchange for that, or whether your customer is an internal team that needs services delivered by someone else, like a new hire or community management services or some design work or whatever it is, right? Like you can start to have peer-to-peer agreements and contractual relationships. And so you enable more self-organization and less of these like political dance around the around the Sun King or around our single treasury. And so some decisions still need to happen at that top level, but the majority of decisions shouldn't happen at that level. And the more we push it down, it helps. Then you can apply like quadratic voting and liquid democracy and a lot of these things to kind of improve these processes. But I see it more as the cherry on top of the cake. While if the fundamental design of where decisions are made and how the organization is structured is wrong, no level of quadratic voting or liquid democracy is going to solve that.
That's very true and very interesting approach. And like I would agree with you when I hear that someone says that DAO voting is like democracy, I'm like, please do not say that because that democracy is so corrupted. And there are so many examples today that we see that democracy is great in words on a paper, but not in reality. And the representatives, well, I think many would agree, are not really people we trust. And many of them are not even elected by us, even though we are told they are. So, yeah, I agree with you on that completely. And this is, to be honest, like I didn't think about this ability to vote and to form some sort of groups that are based on a jury system. And that would have that power. Though I would also challenge, like, what also guarantees that those smaller groups, those smaller teams are not corrupted and they can be also trusted? Because one of the issues, for example, when it comes to liquid governance specifically is, again, it's based on trust while we are building in a trustless environment. And we do know that each and every community has amazing people, but it also has many not so amazing people. And it can happen that some of those not so amazing people find themselves in some groups. I'm wondering, like, what would be the risk for the DAO if they applied that type of environment? What's your quick take on that?
Yeah, so one thing is to differentiate between delegate models or councils that are elected and these sortition citizen assemblies, jury sort of model. The key difference is how transitory they are. So a delegate is going to be elected for a long period of time. They are very visible. Everyone knows who they are. The citizens in a jury, they're not. Or at least they're going to be there maybe for a short period of time, maybe it's a week or two. So if you want to bribe or if you want to threaten these people, blackmail these people to make a specific decision, you're on the clock. You have very little time to actually make that happen. And because you don't know them, like with a delegate, again, delegates are, we're already seeing some of the same issues than with in-country democracy, where we have some ministers who are elected and so on, is that these are people, career politicians, they build power bases, and those power bases also mean a lot of favors to pay back, and on all of the issues we have with corruption and so on. And we're already seeing that, where a lot of the people who get elected, they are influencers. They are not the most smart governance people out there. They're not the ones who care the most about the mission. They're the most popular ones, very often.
And great talkers, right? And great exactly. Bullshitters, I actually called them.
Completely, right? So, it's a problem of the fundamental model. Well, if you elect people at random, again, the time, the clock is on, and then maybe you're going to bribe them and so on. What if one of these people actually says that they're being bribed by you? Well, then the whole bribe thing can go down and you can have issues. Well, if it's someone in power, you can have months to very gently thread around it, to essentially feel, to make an insinuation, to see if they take the next step and so on. Essentially, you can take your time because the stakes are a lot higher. This person is not going to make one decision. They're going to make decisions over 6 months, a year, maybe 2 years, or maybe across multiple protocols. So you can invest a lot more resources to corrupt them. While if someone is elected for a week, you can, the amount of resources that you can invest to corrupt them is small. And, you know, and we all have the espionage movies or the crazy jury movies where people are trying to bribe a jury and so on. So the system is not perfect. But it is more resistant to corruption than the other model. The other thing is there are indeed risks, and like, and the biggest fear people have is, oh, but who are these people? Who's going to make decisions? And usually, and this is probably the reason why this model is not more popular and not more used, is because there is that very intrinsic fear that is going to be very hard to overcome. That being said, what the models usually use is that they use a large enough sample of people and the deliberation process, because people can be assholes online when they're anonymous and they're no one. When they're with others in a room actually discussing, the large majority of people behave very well and fairly prosocial and are fairly reasonable, especially when there is a facility, especially when there is a facilitator to mediate and so on. And even if he's an asynchronous online process, right? Like even if it's not a call, even if it's not like a workshop and so on, still the fact that it's kind of like a small group and the process is framed and so on, people tend to show a little bit in their best behavior. That is no guarantee still, but that's why you need a pool of people. You're not electing one person at random to make decisions. You're electing a group that can self-regulate to a good degree. Sometimes the process is still used that the group essentially crafts the proposal. So they do the solutioning space or even the problem definition space, then the solutioning, and the actual proposal, the voting can still happen at the end and can still be ratified by the community and get that seal of approval. And this is usually the way to start these processes to generate trust that the process is actually working. The final thing that can be done is that you can add certain criteria for the people who can participate in this. So for example, when I was working back at Aragon, even though that product got deprecated, which I think is very unfortunate, but the Aragon couldn't build a team to continue it, but the Aragon Court, part of the mechanism design was that the members, the people who could be pulled into the jury, they have a stake, some capital. So they have skin in the game. And if they broke certain rules, that skin in the game will be slashed and they would lose something. So you can have mechanisms, essentially, this is just one example, but you can have mechanisms so that the people who are selected, they are aligned with the protocol in certain ways. You can have a minimum level of participation in the community, or maybe the need to lock funds for some time so they're more aligned with the long-term value of the protocol, or you could give them rewards for participating, right? It doesn't need to be a stick, it could be a carrot. You can give them rewards, but those rewards are going to vest over a period of time, and you only select people who have a minimum of engagement. That, like, you can start to tweak around the different parameters to increase the safety. It's a little bit hard to talk in blanket because it's going to depend a lot in the setup of every community. But there is a few design levers that we can use to improve further upon the reliability and the safety of this mechanism. The important thing is not to go as far to be like, oh, now we increase the requirement so far that only the core team can be pulled at random.
Of course.
Because then you defeated the whole purpose, right? And this is not something that you use to decide whether the color of your, of buy now or like whatever button, deploy your DApp now should be green or white. That's a very simple decision. You just delegate that to a specialist, right? This is to make high level, more complex policy level, like meta governance level decisions or big impactful decisions. You don't use it every day, but you can still use it fairly frequently.
That's actually like a really, really interesting option to consider. And I think it could also largely incentivize people to be more involved in the community. And you would also, in a way, ensure that if you choose people at random, and you can also ask people who would be interested in actually taking part in these citizen juries, that would, so you can sign up if you're interested, and these are the requirements you need to meet. And I mean, if you're trolling Discord as well, you cannot really get involved because you still have to protect that. Well, thank you so much for this. It was a great talk. And would you please share with the listeners where they can find you?
Yeah, of course. So you can find me on Twitter at underscore Daniel underscore Ospina. That's Ospina. And also, if you want to see some of the work you're doing, and by the way, we're very much an open community. Everything that we're saying, we love to welcome new joiners. So if you want to come hang out with us, it's at rndao, like rnddao. Underscore. And yeah, you can also find us on Twitter. Then on the links, you can start going down the rabbit hole, and my DMs are open. Very happy to engage. Thank you very much, Alexa, for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk about
this. Thank you too. I really enjoyed this talk, and hope to see you again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for watching another episode of DAO Today with Alexa Mill. DAO Today podcast is for educational and thought-provoking purposes only, and nothing said by Alexa or her guests can be construed as legal, business, and/or financial advice. Projects mentioned in the episodes are referred to as examples for educational and informational purposes only. It does not constitute any sort of endorsement or promotion. See you in the next episode.